This is The After Party, live with Jim McAllister and John Daly.
Happy Wednesday. You know, if the show starts late, that means there's fresh news being added by Kim McAllister, the hardest working woman in YouTube.
Yeah, I just can't stop myself. I just keep tampering with everything until we finally hit record, right? Or finally hit go.
Yeah, that's right. But before we get started, look at this. The Lady Beatrice.
Oh,
for Archie's
so nice.
Fancy Feast Fun. Bon Appetit, Archie. Enjoy. $5. Thank you, the Lady Beatrice.
Really kind.
The Lord Archibald, Prince of Floof. Thanks, the Lady Beatrice.
We really appreciate everyone who helps us with the show. Wes, thank you
Wes
for $5.
Right on schedule. More reliable than Muni.
So cool. Wonderful. Thank you guys so much. What a great way to start this show. Absolutely fantastic.
You know what else is a great way to start the show?
Gold Legos.
The Lead Story with Kim McAllister.
Yeah. It's golden Legos. And I, you know, I made a joke when I was writing the description for the show about how it's going to feel maybe the same as hard plastic when you step on it in the middle of the night. The question I have is, why would somebody make this? I don't know.
I think it's a collector's thing.
It is a collector's thing. It's a 14-karat gold Lego piece.
Limited production, right?
Limited production.
Yeah.
It was originally, someone donated it in Pennsylvania to the Goodwill.
Probably somebody's mom or grandma. Somebody didn't know what it was.
Right. It probably came in a pile of other Legos,
right? It was not a nerd. A nerd did not donate that.
No. They were sorting through the bag in Dubois, Pennsylvania. And it was actually in a bag of jewelry that was transferred from the State College Goodwill store. When they found this Lego piece, it's a small Bionicle mask. And if you know anything about Legos, which I have some Lego knowledge because I have a Lego builder at my house, they have these little figurines and you can snap different masks onto the top of their heads. So that's what this looks like.
You can also step on them, all the various pieces.
You can. Doesn't feel good. It came in a little old-looking Lego box, so it didn't look like it was anything really special. And so originally, they priced it at $14.95. They thought, oh, this might be something a little special, but
the
you know.
The one thing I'm thinking is, like, they don't recognize gold?
Maybe. Who recognized?
Because it was with jewelry. It was jewelry.
It's a Lego piece.
Yeah, but it's real gold. And that amount of gold by itself is what, worth $1,000, I think?
They said they didn't know it was worth anything until people started asking if they could buy it for $1,000. So that made them go, huh, what is this thing? And workers researched the piece and discovered it was very, very rare. A Kanohi Hau mask that Lego had created only 30 of these gold masks. That's all. It was a giveaway. There were 25 or 30 of them. So 25 were given away. 5 of them went to people who worked for Lego. That's why there's 30 of them. 23 years later, one of these masks resurfaces and it's very, very rare. So Goodwill decides, no, you can't buy it for $14.95 or $1,000. They auction it off and it sells for $18,100 to an anonymous collector. It is now believed to be the most expensive Lego piece ever sold, and that takes a title from a 14-karat solid gold 2x4 brick that sold for $15,000. So now this Kanohi Hau golden Lego mask is the most expensive Lego ever sold.
And did you say it was 14-karat? People are asking.
It is 14-karat gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think, let's see, Karen and someone else, let's see. Karen says it would have been stamped 14 karat. Colors of the Wind also says 14 karat or higher needs to be stamped.
Yeah, probably inside, right?
Maybe an inside, Wes asking,
I wouldn't, though. I wouldn't even have thought
Lego?
Gold.
Wes asking, how's the Lego, though? Show the other side. I've looked through all the photos. These are the best photos I could find.
Yeah.
The others are blurry and news screen captures.
Yeah. Can you believe they almost sold it for $15?
That seems silly because it's in a... I read, it might have been a different story. It's in an original Lego box.
It is,
so that
but
alone,
it was,
that
it,
would
they
trigger
say
my thought.
It was an old looking Lego box.
Exactly, but it was in the original box. Most things are not in the original box. So if it was in an old Lego box, if you work at one of these stores, you need to be able to recognize something that could be a collectible. Because wasn't gold.
It's Goodwill, though. I mean,
no, but it doesn't matter. Like the people that work there, if they see
like
something
that's
in. It's
not like a fancy antique store. It's Goodwill.
No, but you you can train your employees. If something's in an original box and is a collector's item, like a baseball card that's, you know, in, you know, protected or something like that, you know, something in an original box, you should have one person on staff who's like, you know what, let's get an appraiser or something like that. But we don't need to get an appraiser because we had the Lady Beatrice with another $5. 14K. It's possibly worth the price of gold, of a gold chain at Shane Company. At best, 3,000 probably at Christie's. I think they said somewhere in there that the amount of gold, do you see that in that article? I think it was near $1,000.
Well, people wanted to buy it for $1,000 is what they said.
I saw somewhere that they said the gold alone was
worth that much.
Yeah.
You know, I think it has to do with, even if the price of gold is not worth, you know, the $18,000 auction price here.
No.
It has to do with it's a collector's item for Lego enthusiasts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you for the $5 super sticker, the Lady Beatrice.
And thank you for the Shane Company reference. He's still in Bangkok. He's out there somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he cuts out the middleman, Kim. I don't know if you know
that. Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's how he brings the great prices to you. Because you want a friend in the diamond business.
Yeah.
My favorite part about Shane Company is he makes it sound like it's a local company. It's not.
It isn't?
They're in like every major market. No, in every major market, he lists off the cities.
Right.
You know, like Novato, whatever. And when you're in Colorado, he does the same exact thing. I heard a commercial in Colorado. It's really funny.
They know it. They're trying to get the local customers, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, if you could please leave a review for us on whatever.
You've just given up on trying to get me to read what I'm supposed to read.
On the podcast, on the Spotify. If you're listening to a podcast to us via audio and you can leave a review and you like us, please leave the review. If you don't like us, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Not so much.
Maybe I could get a second monitor so that I'm not looking at the wrong screen at the wrong time.
Oh, that's okay.
Thank you, guys.
But we do appreciate that. And also, if you could click the like button, we appreciate that as well. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We're trying to...
What are you waiting
for? Almost pushing 2,000. We're going to get 2,000
coming up. Yeah, the shorts that I've been posting, the algorithm has favored us. And
Yay!
Is now showing us to more people. My barista at Pete said, hey, your stuff is showing up in my feed more often now.
Wonderful.
And we're getting 2 or 3 subscribers every day. So... I think it was just a month ago we had 1,800, and now we're at 1,832.
Look at us go. So we're flying high on the after party.
Yeah, that's cool.
Not
flying as high as she was earlier.
No, you know, we've been watching these bald eagles, right? They're in their nest. They had that live cam. Here's a shot from the live cam. And they had these 3 eggs. And so everyone was watching and waiting to see if these eaglets would pip, which is when they stick their little beaks through the egg shell. It doesn't
Kim, are you going to tell me that it's a not so live cam?
No, it isn't. Tens of thousands of people were watching on this webcam, and they're likely not going to see 3 eaglets come into the world.
Oh, son.
I know. The environmental team behind the webcam says it's really unlikely now that these eagles named Jackie and Shadow's 3 eggs will hatch. They have no way of knowing why this happened. It's not the first time it's happened, though. The experts suggest this could be environmental. Temperatures, humidity percentages, oxygen levels at high altitudes could be biological. They say Jackie and Shadow likely are not infertile since they have already had 2 sets of eaglets together in 2019 and 2022. But last year's and this year's clutch of eggs just didn't prove to be ones that could survive. So, I mean, I think the camera's still up, people are still watching, but it doesn't look good. So, sorry to be the bearer of bad news there.
Well, you know, things happen. Got a comment I want to address in the chat. Here, Mar saying, laughing out loud, JD spends SF rent but can't buy a second monitor SF. I do have 2 monitors. It's just the one is the laptop that this show is running on, and one is a larger screen. First of all, it was a joke. Second of all, I pay less in rent than I would getting a new apartment in the North Bay because it's rent controlled and I have a roommate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not about that. But it was a joke.
Ha ha, funny. Tell me about the
Florida. Not everybody in San Francisco has money.
Tell me about the spring breakers. Is it making a difference to say,
well,
please,
here's some people
don't
that
come
are
here?
Spending, here are some people spending all of their money. I took, you'll love this. I know this is going to be a little trashy. It's going to be a little Jerry Springer, but I could not resist. I picked the best photos to show you.
Oh,
this is Miami Beach spring break. We have been talking about how Miami Beach is trying to crack down.
Well, she looks like she's having a good time.
Yeah, and this is actually alcohol. This is how they're distributing alcohol. And if you're on the podcast, they've got a water gun skirting into this young woman's mouth.
Yeah.
This next photo is a little
Is she
gross.
Throwing up?
Yeah, this is what happens when you go to spring break. You drink a little too much and get a little queasy. Here we go. A nice traditional shot of a girl being body surfing the crowd. But the reason I'm talking about this is the headline is what crackdown? Florida spring breakers fight for their right to party with huge brawls erupting on the beach as scantily clad revelers smash drinks and soak up the sun despite tough new restrictions. Thousands of spring breakers cut loose as they hit the Florida sands, then each other when high energy spirits boiled over into brawls. And it was only Monday. Now, I've cut video. And one of the videos might get us partially demonetized, but if you listen, this is not the first part, but the second part, you'll hear the soundtrack, and I think it's almost, I don't know, it's almost poetic, the music that accompanies this clip. So here is spring break going on right now in Florida. Check this out. You take alcohol, you add young people, and a Miley Cyrus accompaniment.
This does not look fun. This does not look like a party, honestly. Wild.
I can love you better than you can.
What are they doing?
They're being drunk and stupid, and Miami Beach is trying to stop it, and guess what? What can you do? What can you do? The city is a destination.
This is awful.
Was that you when you were young?
No. Mm-mm.
No?
No.
I don't think I even had
I've never been involved in a physical fight in my life. No.
I've defended myself. I've been punched. I've been sucker punched outside of a bar. And I was like, I wasn't even the intended person. They hit me by accident.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And when you get hit hard, it's like you go into like this fight or flight kind of shock.
Sure. I
can imagine.
Because
you're not expecting it. Yeah, that was really disturbing. And I defended myself in like high school or junior high. I'm thinking one particular person. It's funny when you think about like childhood bullies.
Yeah.
Like you get this flash of this image. I'm not going to say his name, but.
We know he knows who you are. I took a self-defense class once. And I even sucked at that, like that, you know, you're ready for them to come at you and you're supposed to do certain maneuvers to defend yourself. And all I could do was like this, like, don't hit me. Yeah, no, I can't even imagine getting into a full-fledged fight like that. Yeah. Oh.
Do you like the Miley Cyrus? I could love you better than I can love myself. How does it go? I can love me better than you can.
I can love you better than...
I can love me better than
I can love me better than you can.
Yeah, it was her breakup song because she was with Liam Hemsworth, right?
Yeah. And
she was married and broke up.
It's just, that was very poetic. Whoa, wow. Oh, my God.
Next up.
I guess it's fun for the onlookers, says Walter.
Yeah, and, you know, if you want to, like, look at the press coverage,
Spring Break Fight Club.
It's like Jerry Springer, like, young addiction, like, addition on the beach, right?
That's wild.
Or addiction. Addiction works as well.
Oh, man.
Okay. Disney back in the news.
Disney is back in the news. You know, we've been talking about this expansion of Disneyland. And Disney officials were meeting with the leaders of the Anaheim City Council. They met for 6 hours and they, at the end of it, decided, all right, Disneyland, you can indeed move forward with your sweeping expansion. The 6 hour long meeting included speeches from the president of Disneyland, Disneyland cast members, and a bunch of people who weren't so excited about this whole expansion, too. But the company got approval from the Anaheim Planning Commission to move this expansion to the next round of approvals. Now they go from the Planning Commission to the City Council. So the City Council vote is scheduled for April 16th. They're hoping to have this whole project approved this year. This is a 10-year expansion of the Disneyland Resort. multi-billion-dollar investment by Disneyland, massive theme park expansion. We've got new hotels, new lands, new restaurants, new everything. They teased during the meeting with the Planning Commission that they plan to put a Frozen Land, Peter Pan, Tangled, Zootopia, Tron, and Toy Story. But they're also talking about more integrated experience, better transportation systems around Disneyland, more hotels, parks blending together in a different way, and an expanded downtown Disney, which is very lucrative for them, that huge shopping area and dining area, which resembles Disney Springs at Walt Disney World. So they want to make that bigger as well. So, yeah, at least for now, we've got a positive decision from the Planning Commission, and now they go off to the Anaheim City Council.
As a former cast member, will you allow me to take my shot at Disney?
Go ahead.
You know, they have downtown Disney. It's very authentic because you also have the homeless people, which are their employees that are living out of their cars. So
no,
maybe.
Really?
Yes. Maybe they can. That's all over the news. So maybe they can build a homeless shelter for their employees.
Are you saying they don't pay their employees enough so that they can live somewhere? They have to live in their cars?
You've seen these stories, haven't you?
I haven't. No, this is new.
No, cast members live out of their cars. These people are so dedicated to working at Disney. They want to work at Disney. And that's the one thing about working at Disney is that they know most people are either the employees at the parks are like usually obsessed. Mm-hmm. Like the younger people, they really want to work there and they leverage that, right? They take advantage of that.
Is
like if you work at a radio
wage?
Station, I think it is minimum. It's got to be minimum wage, but it's not enough to live there, I guess.
No.
But, you know, it's like radio. They know a lot of people are passionate about radio, right? So mm-hmm. they leverage that and they know they don't have to pay you as much. And the other thing is the people are building their career, right? So if you're in the media, they know this is ABC Disney. This is good on your resume. They take advantage of that because they don't have to pay you as much, right? They know you're working up the rungs. But yeah, if Disney is spending all this, you know, billions and billions of dollars, maybe they could take care of their cast members.
God, that's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, no me gusta.
Yeah.
All right, we're moving to animals now, and this is exciting. I always love this. It happened over Marin County, and it was big news a couple of years ago. I remember I had Kim Schaffer on the morning show on KGO to talk about it.
Oh, right.
It's called murmuration.
And speaking it's when of people who used to work at KGO.
Yay. Hi,
Kim, we were dedicated to radio, and we're underpaid, like all of us.
So murmuration is when these starlings... flock together and fly in certain directions together, right? You
yes.
see one goes to a tree, they all go, and they move through the sky
yes.
in what looks like this choreographed dance. It's really, really beautiful. Except all those birds in one area, and what does it lead to?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Murmurations have been dazzling onlookers and going viral online. But unfortunately, bird poop is the result.
So yesterday we had bugs peeing, and now we have birds pooping. We have video. Do you want to see it?
I do. Can we see it, please?
You
please,
don't
please.
See the pooping, but
just see the murmurations.
You know what's going on here.
Yeah. These are birds that are flocking together in this phenomenon known as murmuration. And it brings thousands of people out, hundreds of people, depending on where this is in the UK, to just stand there and watch. In Marin County, there were people always standing and watching this. It's beautiful. Such a phenomenon. But look at how many birds there are. Yep.
That's very cool.
So in Great Gonnerby, Lincolnshire in the UK, this
Wait,
English
what?
Village.
Say that
Great,
again.
Great Gonnerby, Lincolnshire.
Gonnerby?
Mm-hmm. Gonnerby. It's an English village in the UK, of course, because it's English. It would be in the UK.
It's a shire. Yeah.
No, don't mean to be redundant.
It's the either birds... that or Lord of the Rings. It's Middle Earth.
That's right. It's Middle Earth. The birds putting on breath-catching aerial displays over this village also covered the homes, the vehicles, the sidewalks, the roads, and the lawns with bird scat, bird poop. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Even just going out the front door, people say, you end up with it on your hands because it's all over handles everywhere.
Imagine your car. Hope you have a garage.
Ew, gross. Some locals said the birds have been known to drop the smelly bombs on the heads of people who stop to watch them flying in their formations. They said it is a fantastic sight to see, but it's not so much fun when you get, bird poop on your head. They said they'd
it's all
strongly
fun and games
until you get pooped on. Wear a hat if you're going to go out and watch it. You can get some great camera shots of those birds. Not all residents, though, are happy about it, saying they have to cover their cars at night with tarps to protect it from a rain of bird poop.
I'm just imagining, you know how I've shown you these videos where cats see birds out the window and they go, and they get really excited. Can you imagine all the cats? Their reaction to this?
They're not low. It's like where a cat could see it out a window. They're really high in the sky.
Oh, they're really high? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Archie, though, he'll crane his neck, and he's good at detecting birds across the street. I'll hear him, and I look, and I'm like, I don't see any birds, and there's a bird, like, way across the street on top of a building. Oh. They've got good sight.
Hey, since we're talking about our kids right now, can I tell you that Jacob is student of the week at his class?
Wow.
Really exciting.
Very cool.
Good times.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Archie's been very well behaved a year back.
Nice.
This week he's been very well behaved. You know who else was being well behaved and who was a good boy or good girl? This little one, a stray dog, boards a commuter train in British Columbia.
Just riding around, hanging out.
A British Columbia animal shelter said a stray dog was brought in after taking a solo ride on a commuter train. This is a New Westminster Animal Services. They said the dog was found unattended aboard a train at Sapperton SkyTrain Station and is believed to have boarded at New Westminster Station. You know where that is. SkyTrain attendants captured the Boston Terrier and turned the canine over to animal services. The shelter is now trying to identify the dog's owner so it can be sent home. Now, this is interesting. I don't know what the policy here is locally, but officials said the canine will be held for 96 hours before its owner loses the right to reclaim it.
That's pretty fast.
That seems rather quick, right?
What if the dog is from a different area?
That's what I was thinking. I'm like,
and
a lot of people
don't. How would they know to check there, right?
Yeah. They said we can make the best decision for the animal after that period of time, adoption, foster transfer, etc. It has only been 24 hours since the dog was impounded, so we're optimistic that an owner will come forward, according to a spokesperson. That just seemed really quick. So if anybody knows what the policies are around here, I'm curious. I hope it's not that quick, you know?
Gosh, yeah, that does seem really quick. Poor guy.
Because you hear these stories where, like, the dog gets in a car or on a truck or, you know.
It's almost like a movie where, you know, you see the dog on the train and whatever. You almost don't want him to get caught. But I sure hope they find the family.
Really cool. And once since you again, did my housekeeping, I'm going to do your housekeeping.
Okay, go ahead.
If you can click like and subscribe, we appreciate it. Share the show on social media, Facebook, X. If you can share the shorts, like saying that, that would help us out as we get more subscribers. If you can go through all the shorts and click like on all of them and click like on all the shows.
Click. I did the other day. Just click.
That's what I do. I go around recruiting all my friends to click like. sick of me. I know they're sick of me.
Subscribe it, like it, love it.
But you know what we're not sick of?
I'll tell you what I don't like.
Oh,
is it Weird News Wednesday?
Yeah. But what
I
do
love
you not like?
Weird News Wednesday.
What do you not like?
Toilet paper on the roadway.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I do like it. When I did traffic, my favorites were always like a porta potty that spilled on the road because there's so many jokes that can be made, right?
Yeah.
With the Bay Area's best traffic coverage, Kim McAllister, KGO, Radio News.
Always ready to go.
So this is a California highway covered in toilet paper that fell off a pickup truck.
Oh, but before we get started, we need to announce
it. But it is Weird News Wednesday, and this is sponsored by Jerry J, who gave us $50.
Yay.
Thank you to Jerry J for sponsoring. She's, I gave her the option. Which segment you want to, which segment do you want to sponsor? And she said, Weird News Wednesday sounds really cool. So Jerry J, thank you for the $50. We had difficulty with fundraising last month. So you guys are really helping us fill that gap.
That's cool.
Now, on to the
Thank you
Weird
for
News
sponsoring
Wednesday.
Weird News Wednesday. The CHP said there was some brief traffic delays on a highway when a pickup truck spilled hundreds of rolls of toilet paper onto the roadway. It was only three boxes, but it fell off the back of a Ford F-350 on I-5 near Calgrove Boulevard, happened in Santa Clarita in Southern California. And it happened at 12:20 p.m. Monday, so right in the middle of the lunch rush, right?
Okay, something to point out, though, it really depends on the size of the box.
It
like,
does.
Are we talking an industrial sized box, or are we talking like a tiny little box?
The boxes broke apart, and the scene shows traffic backed up as officers are throwing rolls of toilet paper over the cement barrier, trying to huck them into this construction site. The CHP said the toilet paper mess was mostly cleared up in just a few minutes, but still, what an absolute disaster area.
You ready to take a look at the video?
I want to see it. Let's see what it looks like.
Thoughts over the 5 freeway in Santa Clarita, where CHP officers were called to clear the roadway of boxes and boxes of what? Toilet paper. It's near Calgrove Boulevard, where 3 cases of the bathroom tissue fell from a truck, littering the roadway there. Once they got there shortly after noon, officers cleared the road just a few minutes. Despite the quick work, the mess still caused a backup on the freeway.
Backup. Clogged.
And mess. We're not going to even touch any of that.
I know.
This is not comedy hour.
It's right. No, it's very serious, especially if you're one of those drivers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, you touched it. You already touched it. Went there.
Well, that was Fox 11, former home of Mark Thompson, weatherman.
It's the dancing weatherman. It's the beautiful thing, though, you know, when you get something like that. I mean, you can't not make the jokes, right?
Right. Yeah. You could see the older anchor on the right. She's just like, oh, this isn't proper. This isn't proper. No jokes. This isn't comedy hour.
You know,
the younger anchor is like, no, totally, we're doing this.
Did you see the officer who was like, did not look happy to be out there picking up that toilet paper?
Is that the one flinging them behind him?
No, one. He looked like he was doing the work. The other one's like, picked one up, threw it.
Yeah, but those were large boxes.
Wait for a second. Pick one up, threw it.
Like, no. Those were large. Those were large boxes. Yeah, pretty cool. Next up, we have, this is kind of funny. You know, I love my cats.
Yeah.
Check this out. This is March Meowness.
Oh.
Not March Madness. Not March Madness.
Meowness.
March
Meowness.
March Meowness. This library in Massachusetts is allowing patrons with lost or damaged items to pay their fees with an unusual form of currency, cat pictures. Oh,
what?
Man. Do I have plenty of these? The Worcester Public Library announced its March Meowness program, which runs through the end of the month, and will allow library patrons to clear their accounts of fines if they submit a photo or drawing of a cat in place of cash. Quote, even if you don't have a cat in your life, you can still draw one, according to the public library executive director. Even if it's one of the big cats, like a tiger or a lion, we'll be excited to see those. The library said the program was inspired when officials noticed a large number of young patrons had amassed significant fines due to COVID-19 in the pandemic. So they said with more than 400 accounts cleared of fines during the first 5 days of the month. That's really cool. So these young people are getting them cleared. Mm-hmm. The library's website clarified that the program is not limited to images of felines. We will accept honorary cats as well. So you may show up with a picture or drawing of a dog, raccoon, orca, a capybara, or any other animal. Oh, that's cool. They're being very inclusive. Yeah. So March Meowness.
That's fun.
In Massachusetts.
There was a mysterious monolith found on a hillside in Wales. Mysterious silver monolith has been found, evoking memories of similar structures when they appeared around the world in 2020. I don't know if you recall
that. Yeah, we covered this on the morning show with Nikki Medoro when the first one was in the Utah desert.
They just turned up in these weird places.
Yeah.
So this one, again, is 10 feet tall, made of metal, and it was found by a man out for a run on Hay Bluff, near Hay-on-Wye, Powys, which is, I guess, in Wales. And he is on his run, and he comes across this thing. He said, I thought it looked a little bizarre. Wait, I have to... Can you do Welsh? I can't do Welsh.
No one can do Welsh. Even the Welsh can't do Welsh.
It might be a scientific media research thing collecting rainwater. But then he realized it was way too tall and way too strange for that. He said, I went up to it. It was about 10 feet tall at least and triangular, definitely stainless steel, and hollow. I imagine pretty light enough for 2 people to carry it up and plant it in the ground. Very similar to the one that you mentioned, John, found in the Utah desert.
Here it is on the left.
And then there were further discoveries and locations in California, Texas, Florida, Wisconsin, Romania, and England's Isle of Wight.
Yeah, the one on the right here is the Isle of Wight. The one on the left is Utah.
So an anonymous art collective called the Most Famous Artist took credit for U.S.-based monoliths. No one, though, has come forward to claim this one.
Yeah, because Karen's saying Karen's asking, can you say hoax? So it's most likely the same group. Because it looks very similar. Look at the one on the left, the original one, right?
Yeah.
And then if I go back to the one, this current one, it's almost identical.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be this group.
Yeah. I would think so. Here we go again. Somebody out there having a little fun.
Mamma mia. Mysterious monolith to Scottish students' message in a bottle. This is kind of, you know, when
I
you throw
love a, this story.
If
love
you have
it.
A message in a bottle, right, and you throw it in the ocean, you're expecting it what to go across the Atlantic, maybe go to
message
South America,
in a bottle.
something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you, what would you consider a successful message in a bottle, right?
I would
across
consider,
the ocean?
I mean, you throw it in there, you see it go out on the waves and go on its merry way, you think. It's going places. It's
right.
going far.
Right, right, right. But this one, a woman cleaning up trash on a Scottish beach found a message in a bottle that had been launched about 6 miles away by a trio of school children. Now you might be thinking a couple years ago. Oh, no. 1984.
Wow.
Yeah,
so it's
Jenny
just been
Smith.
Bobbing around locally for all the... Hey, maybe it did go to exotic locales and came back.
Yeah. Maybe it's just local and organic. Jenny Smith said she was filling bags with trash along the Tay Estuary in Angus, you know where that is, when she found a bottle with something colorful inside. I picked up 3 bins of rubbish and found this bottle, and I thought there was something like a felt-tip pen inside of it. You know, I thought that was strange. I got it out, and it was rolled up with an elastic band around it. She unfurled the paper and discovered it was a hand-drawn map. The girl who drew the map had cleverly used wax crayon as the outside wrapping. So it had protected it from some of the water that had managed to seep in. The map protected 3 messages written by a trio of 8-year-old students who had attended Wormit Primary School in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
The notes, which bore a pirate theme, featured the students complaining about their teacher making them do math. Oh, we can all relate to that.
Yep. This is an age-old complaint.
Please, please help me, one of the notes reads. I am one of the crew at Wormit Primary School, and I've been taken captive by the terrible Miss I. Elder. My name is Kelly McComb, and I'm 8. Well, back to Miss L. Elder, she makes us do awful work like sums, and I'm just managing to write this letter in private. Capitalized, please, someone help me. This lady, Smith, was able to contact the note's author, now named Kelly Laskowitz, as well as 2 other girls, Linda Bell and Anna Greenhalgh. The women said the message in the bottle had been part of a school assignment when they were learning about pirates. It's a bit disappointing that it took 40 years to travel about 6 miles down the Tay.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if it got a little bit further, she told the TV station. The women said they had remained close friends in the ensuing decades since they wrote the letters. We're all friends together. They're my oldest friends. We've been friends with the longest out of everybody, so it's quite a nice story. Smith said the bottle and its contents will be returned to the primary school. So that's cool.
BW Rock says it'd be fun to put one of those tracker tags in one and send it off and see where it goes.
Yeah, you would have to isolate that to keep the water from getting in. But yeah.
So interesting. Let's talk about cardboard sleds. We used to do this in Petaluma. They weren't this good looking. But back before all the development on my street, we had these hills with just brown grass growing on them, or green grass when it was raining.
Right.
And we would take these pieces of cardboard and we would sled, basically put your butt on a piece of cardboard, grab the edges, and slide it all the way down the hill, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similar. These are more creative cardboard sleds. They have races at this Pennsylvania resort. They are creatively designed homemade sleds at the Cardboard Box Race. It happens at Bear Creek Mountain Resort in Berks County, Pennsylvania. And they have this every year. They host the Cardboard Box Race on a Sunday. Because of snow on the mountain, they had to do it a little early this year. But they raced down. They didn't have very much snow left. So the sleds constructed from cardboard, duct tape, and zip ties were used. And this year, some of the more creative entries included one designed like a Star Wars X-Wing. There was one that designed as a Formula One car. A lot of people designed them as boats. The winners, a man and his 13-year-old daughter, won the most creative prize for their sled modeled after a Lego brick. He drove it down the hill while dressed as a cardboard Lego minifig costume. is what he was. Another family took the top spot with their speed-focused design. So they're just having fun in Pennsylvania, you know?
Very cool.
Yeah.
I see some comments here. I want to get these on the screen. For that last, the toilet paper story, Jim Slayton saying that police officer was tossing toilet paper like Trump was tossing paper towels.
Yeah, pretty much, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
And Jerry, our sponsor of the segment, says, this is Jerry Johnson sponsoring the segment. Love the weird news and both of you. Thank you. We love you, Jerry. Thank you for the support.
Yeah, thank you for sponsoring the segment. That's awesome.
Do you want to keep going? We're a little over time, but we have two more stories.
Yeah, let's do it. Next one is about, this is cool, this silent film that no one had seen for years and years and years is finally back.
Yeah. Now, if you are interested in this, I recommend Googling it, Lost Silent Film,
Google
Omaha.
It.
Yeah, because there's a very long local news piece that you can find. You can watch the video about it. It's very, very interesting, but we'll just give you an overview. This is a long-lost silent film from 1923, and it'll be shown publicly for the first time in decades after being discovered at an auction. Gary Huggins of Kansas City said he went into an auction in Omaha last year to look for rare or antique films. There was this distributor that had been in Omaha for decades, and he had gone out of business a while ago, and this auction house had some of his films, so I drove up just to see what was up there. He paid $20 for a stack of film reels because one of them included, the included pieces was an old cartoon that caught his eye. It's the best 20 I've ever invested, he said for sure. He used his projector to go through the stack and see what he had purchased and was surprised to see Clara Bow. Or is it Clara Bow? Clara Bow?
I think it's Bow.
Mm-hmm. I think it's Clara Bow. Clara Bow, one of the biggest stars of the film silent era. Wow. So this is silent film era footage of Clara Bow. David Stein, a Hollywood historian and Bow's official biographer, said the reel that Huggins purchased was The Pill Pounder, a comedy short that was thought to be long lost. When someone said to me, would you be interested in a print of The Pill Pounder? I assumed they were making fun of me because I thought, would I be interested? It would be a miracle. And it's a miracle. He said the film starred a 17-year-old Bow and is the oldest of her works to have been rediscovered. This biographer of hers purchased the film from Huggins, and he said the film strips in the 1920s were made using nitrate, and that was unstable and combustible, right? So I thought, well, we'll never find this film. The film was in good condition, and he paid to have it restored. It will be shown, and now here's a local connection, it will be shown on the big screen for the first time in 101 years at the San Francisco Silent Film Festival.
Oh, this is cool.
Coming up next month in April. This is why I do what I do, though I never dared dream this one would resurface, Stein wrote on social media. Miracles really do happen. So that's pretty cool. If you're interested in this, just Google silent film found Omaha and watch the video. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that does sound really fun. Wow, that's cool. Okay, this woman's potato plant, got really big. It grew to 11.
How big is it, Kim?
It's 11 feet 3 inches tall, John Daly.
Whoa.
Yeah. It has now, by the Guinness Book of World Records, officially become the tallest in the world. This is in North Carolina. Cecilia Smith of Nebo said she started growing her potato plant, which she calls Gertrude, in February of 2023. She started to suspect by May that it might end up being the tallest in the world. So Smith says she's now received a certificate confirming Gertrude is indeed the tallest potato plant in the world, measured at 11 feet, 3 inches tall last July. She took the record from a 9-foot, 4-inch potato plant grown in Great Britain. So, I mean, I guess she can be very proud of her gardening prowess. That's a really long potato vine. Look at that.
Very cool. I wouldn't have recognized what was small and what was big.
No, I wouldn't either.
Yeah. So good on her. That's really cool.
I would have thought, I guess this is normal. I don't know.
Well, that was Weird News Wednesday.
Yay.
Sponsored by Jerry Jay, who was in our chat. And we appreciate the $50 contribution.
Totally.
And speaking of contributions, it's time to take a break, Kim.
Can we get Archie this time?
Oh, you know what? I was going to rotate back to me, but you know what? Archie is more popular than I am. Yeah. So let's go with Archie.
Thank you.
The After Party Live is underwritten by our audience, and without you, this show wouldn't be possible. For $1 a day, you could help feed a very moody 3-year-old cat with a taste for turkey and chicken. Every day across this world, cats go 30 minutes without food and don't know where to turn. Any dollar amount is appreciated, and it all adds up.
The PayPal link can be found in the About section of the YouTube channel or at the bottom of the show description. Thank you for your consideration.
Are you hungry? You want food?
A party where you don't even have to leave the house. You could be naked for all we care. The After Party, live.
That's right.
That's me. Thank you to ongoing contributors Kim H. You have a great name, Kim. And Susan S. You also have a great name. Thank you guys for contributing to the After Party Live. And in the Super Chat Super Sticker Department, Lady Beatrice coming in with a $5 Super Sticker. Thank you for that. And Wes with $5 as well today. So grateful for you guys. Lady Beatrice with another one talking about the 14K Lego. Thank you so much for that.
Thank
you guys.
You guys
are awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need every contribution that we can get. I'm not saying we need help. I mean, in general, but
I think we need help. We need all the help we can get.
It does take a lot of time to produce the show. And
it's okay to say that we need help.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it work. It takes a lot of time. So every contribution helps here get the show, expanded. I'm trying to spend as much time as I can to love and nurture it. But as Marcus said, it's like a hustle. It's a hustle to try to get a channel growing and expanding.
Are you watering it like a really long potato vine?
I am. I'm tending to it in my spare time. I'm trying to give it more and more time, but I have a full-time job, but I am dedicated to this cause.
Oh no, Deidre with $5. Thank you. Y'all can go to hell and I have to go to Texas tomorrow. Sorry to miss trivia this week. Deidre, you will be missed. I love it when you're here for trivia and whenever you're here.
Well, and we'll give somebody else an opportunity to win, Deidre.
I will say, have a good time in Texas though. As good a time as you can have in Texas.
I had fun in Texas.
Yeah. We like the people in Bee Cave.
Yeah, Austin is very nice. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Grant in Bee Cave, my cousin.
Yeah. And thank you for the contribution, Deidre. Very, very nice.
Yes.
All right. So let us move now toward this story about prepping for disaster, which apparently people are doing this differently. A lot more Americans, I guess, are losing trust. So I guess more people are preparing for the worst.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for stalling as my computer crashed and I rebooted the browser. Prepping for disaster diversifies as more Americans lose trust. Brooke Morgan surveyed booths at the Survivor and Prepper show. I know you're big on those, right, Kim? This was in Colorado. They were stocked with boxes of ammunition, mounds of trauma kits, and every type of knife imaginable.
Wow.
A self-described 30-year-old lesbian from Indiana, Morgan is one of the new breed of Americans getting ready to survive political upheaval and natural catastrophes, a pursuit until recently was largely associated with far-right movements such as white nationalists since the 1980s. Researchers say the number of preppers has doubled in size to about 20 million since 2017. Much of that growth is from minorities and people considered left of center politically. Is that surprising to you?
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit surprising, but I guess it makes sense. Their sense of insecurity was heightened by Donald Trump's 2016 election, the COVID-19 pandemic, and more frequent extreme weather and the 2020 racial justice protests following the murder of George Floyd.
Yep.
Morgan says, I'm really surprised by the number of people of color here. I always went to these shows with my family in Indiana. It was just white people who were my parents' age. There are a lot of younger people here, too. It's a real change. Morgan grew up in a prepper family and still considers herself self-reliant and ready to handle a disaster.
What's a proper family?
A prepper family.
A prepper. Okay, got
it. A proper
somebody who
prepper,
preps.
A proper prepper family.
A proper prepper. Got it. Okay.
With pickles.
Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Yeah, a pepper. A pepper. Proper prepper pepper.
Pickled peppers.
I'm a proper pepper. Prepper pepper. She left the prepper world of her youth behind in part to escape the conservatism associated with the movement. The diversification of prepping was clear last weekend at the Survivor. I'm sorry, not Survivor. That's a TV show. Survival and Prepper Show. Now it's in my head. At the fairgrounds there in Boulder County. This is a liberal part of the area that was which Joe Biden won in 2020 with nearly 57 percentage points over Trump. So over 2,700 people paid $10 each to attend the show. I just thought it was interesting. They said bearded white men were with closely cropped hair and heavily tattooed arms were there, but so were the hippie moms carrying babies in rainbow-colored slings, chatting about canning methods, Latino families looking over greenhouses and water filtration systems, and member of the local Mountain View Fire Rescue Team, who in 2021 These were members of this fire team. In 2021, battled a devastating fire in the region, giving CPR demonstrations, encouraging citizens to be more prepared for extreme events.
This is wild.
Yeah. So this is a new thing.
It's not just the crazy people who live out in the cabins, right?
Yeah.
It's everybody now preparing for the worst. Yeah. Can I tell you this? I have to say why Deidre's going to Texas. She's going to Austin for her mother's 6th wedding.
Whoa.
And the good news is that your mom hasn't given up on love, right?
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
And she's not going to Vegas.
That's really funny.
6 sounds like a Vegas wedding to me.
Yeah, love it.
Wow.
Okay, let's talk about this one. If you've always dreamed, like me, of having a beach house, of living on the coast, not a lot of places left in California where you can do that affordably. But we have one place left. One county where living on the coast within reach of the ocean is affordable. You might not want to move there, but it is affordable. Apparently, Del Norte County.
Del
Norte County.
Del Norte is back. That's a callback.
It's the median home price in Del Norte is $295,000. It's the second lowest in the state, behind only Lassen County at $229,000. Tourism officials in Del Norte say, look at that, the towering redwoods, the rugged seaside cliffs, beautiful, the picturesque lighthouses, and the endless adventures in hiking, camping, and whitewater rafting. It's a great place, they say, for spirited independence, where we encourage entertaining yourself and getting lost in wonder as part of the journey. Yet, Del Norte has only one incorporated city, that's Crescent City, where you can find homes just blocks from the ocean in the $200,000 to $300,000 range, that according to Zillow. The living wage needed to support a family of four in Del Norte County is just about $40 an hour or $82,000 a year, and that is much less than almost everywhere else. Compare it to Santa Barbara County, where the median home price is $1.28 million. The living wage for a family of two adults and two kids, $54 an hour or $112,000 per year. In Santa Cruz, $64 an hour, $133,000 a year is what you would need. So, you know, they've got Humboldt and Mendocino counties as well. They also have median home prices below $500,000. If you want to try to live anywhere along the coast in the Bay Area or the Central Coast, you're going to have trouble finding a beach house for anything less than $800,000, and that's being generous.
BW Rock coming in with a comment, a tsunami took out Crescent City 50 to 60 years ago, and it's not an attractive town. Good luck with that. Ha ha. Yeah. That reminds me, when I was younger, I think I was a senior in high school or going into college, I drove, my mom wanted to go visit our relatives in British Columbia. So we drove up the coast to Canada. And the thing that will never leave my mind is being pulled over in Crescent City because they have a speed trap. And now it makes sense because the county doesn't have a lot of money. They don't have a lot of property taxes, apparently. 101 at that point, I don't know what it's like now. Maybe you remember going through there, Kim. But it went 101, right? Which is a U.S. highway. Dropped from 55 miles per hour to 25 miles per hour. It was a speed trap. And I got pulled over for the first time. And it was so embarrassing because my mom would not stop talking. And I'm just like, Mom, shut up, shut up, shut up. And I made the rookie mistake of not changing the rear view mirror because she had been driving, and then we swapped, and then I was driving, and I didn't adjust the rear view mirror, so I didn't see the police officer behind me. And it took way too long for me to pull over, so I got chastised. And the funny thing is, he said, you need to slow down before you get into Oregon, because it's only 55 miles per hour on their highways there, and they see your California plates, and they will pull you over. But he did let me go with a warning because I had a clean record.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Murphy says she'd love to retire to Pismo Beach. Not the waterfront, though, just near town. And BW Rock says most of the people there are family members of the guys locked up in Pelican Bay, which is the Supermax prison where Manson was. I'd like to think there's other people there, too.
Is this explaining the property values?
I guess so. Maybe that's why it's so cheap to live there. I don't know the answer. Wow. Although, I would think that living on the coast would be beautiful. In some cases, and I was looking at this house that's for sale, and I forget where. It was on this Facebook page that I like called For the Love of Old Houses. And they had this home, and it's this gorgeous home perched on an ocean bluff on a court overlooking the sea. And they show you the pictures of the inside of the house, and it's so pretty. And then they show you the overhead view of the house, and it's on this cliff where someone's built this like concrete thing to keep the hillside from crumbling. And I'm thinking, no way. You have to, there was a time where I would have loved to live right smack on the ocean.
Right.
Not
until
anymore.
You wake up in the water.
I would never want to buy a house right smack on the ocean anymore, because who knows? As we've said before, if the ocean wants your house, it's going to take your house, right?
And the other thing is, I know somebody, I had a boss who lived in Bodega Bay, like near the water, and you have to paint your house constantly.
Yeah.
Because the salt ocean water
The
air just eats away at your house.
Yeah.
The nice thing about the ocean is you can go there when the weather's nice and then you can leave. But if you live there and it's foggy, mm-hmm. like you're in that all the time, not so hot.
Well, that's when I lived in Santa Cruz, there's always morning fog, burned off by midday. You know, you get used to that kind of weather.
Yeah, it depends on where you are, but I think it's more ideal to visit the beach when it's hot.
Mindy says cars rest as well.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, your car's sitting there in the salty water.
William says, I live in the woods in Santa Cruz County. I can see the ocean from here. Beautiful but challenging. Yeah, because of the fire danger probably where you are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's this the CZU? I'm trying to remember the fire.
Oh, that fire.
The CZU. For a time there, I was speaking in fire district codes.
Yeah.
So I was remote producing our fire coverage when I didn't work at KGO, because they didn't have any producers to produce fire coverage. So I just volunteered and did it from home.
Yeah.
And the morning those fires broke out, Brett was on the air. They brought in John Rothman, and I was at my house just producing fire coverage. And the people that work at Cal Fire are amazing.
Really amazing.
The media people are great. Mm-hmm. And if you ever see people from Cal Fire, thank them for what they do.
Karen says, I see houses above cliffs on Hawaii Island listed on Zillow, but you look more carefully at the photos and the cliffs are falling into the ocean. Absolutely. Janet says, I lived in Moss Beach for years. I don't want to live along the coast again. Yeah.
Yeah. Karen asking how, it's jumping here. Karen asking, how brave are those firefighters? Yeah.
Very brave. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. The CZU fire complex. Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
Miss Organic says, miss living in Bonnie Doon, but you have to be prepared for anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of prepared for anything, what about cutting the cord? Have you cut the cord on cable?
I did cut the cord. I'm a streamer only now.
How are you getting live TV? CNN.
Mostly YouTube TV.
Oh, you have YouTube TV.
Yeah, but I like to watch things online.
Okay.
On election night, that's when I go to live coverage mostly.
Yeah, live coverage. Well,
and if I need to, I can go next door to my mom's house as well, because we like to watch those things together.
And she has cable.
Yeah.
My mom's not giving up cable, and I told her she could save money because they keep raising her bill. It started at like $99 for triple play. You know, have the internet, the phone, and the TV. Now it's over $200 for the exact same product.
How are you getting the live coverage?
I have YouTube TV.
Yeah.
And we have, my roommate and I split the cost of fiber optic internet from Sonic.net.
Oh, look at that. It's different. YouTube TV is different than just YouTube, right?
Yes. YouTube TV is basically what they call OTT, over the top. So it's a service over the top of internet. And it's basically the online digital offering of cable, right? So it's like basically it replicates cable. And it has built-in DVR with unlimited capacity, which is really cool. Have you taken advantage of that?
Mm-mm.
CNN is on Max. Oh, I didn't know they were live streaming it.
Yeah.
For the longest time, they wouldn't live stream it because the cable operators had a contract that prevented that from happening. So that's cool that they're offering that now. But anyway, the story here is YouTube TV is thriving in the cable replacement space. And we can see why. You're using it. I'm using it as a one-stop shop for consumers. As many entertainment industries experts declare the streaming wars over, I don't know about that, one challenger is giving streaming king Netflix a run for its money in total viewers, YouTube. The Alphabet-owned video platform has beaten out all major streamers for the highest share of TV viewing over the past year, according to Nielsen. Its YouTube subscription service is also gaining ground on the major cable giants in the U.S. as cord-cutting continues to weigh heavily on the traditional carriers. As the network's bleed video customers, YouTube TV reported 8 million subscribers in 2023, nearly double the closest, what they call, you ready for an acronym? VMVPD, Virtual Multi-Channel Video Programming Distributors. And so that refers to people, to companies like Hulu Plus. So Hulu Plus Live TV, which is the most recently reported, their numbers were at 4.6 million. And with a quarter of pay TV subscriptions now coming from digital services, a shift that's obviously altering the cable landscape, YouTube TV is positioned as a trailblazer. They say, we believe this is the start of the new arms race in streaming, with YouTube in a position to gain more market share on cord-cutting customers. This is according to a equity research analyst. Mm-hmm. YouTube disrupted the television industry by prioritizing overall viewership above all else, embracing both creator content from its main video platform and its live TV vertical, while also investing in live sports. Rather than fighting over the same channels as its traditional and digital pay competitors, YouTube is melding the creator-generated content it's known for with a cable alternative. And YouTube has already won over the coveted millennial and Gen Z viewers with that the other cable companies and offerings are struggling to entice. And they found a way to bring cable TV to these younger people. So I thought that was interesting. Here you can see, it's hard to make out the names here, but you can see relative to the other streamers. And we have the cable companies on the left here. There's Charter Communications in the first column, then Comcast, then DirecTV, Satellite. The number four here is YouTube TV. So you can see it's growing. After that is Dish Satellite, then Hulu Live TV, Sling TV, and then Fubo. But yeah, things are a-changing.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah, YouTube TV, if you're looking to get cable over the internet, it is a good option. It is, you know, it's not cheap. The price keeps going up. But what they offer, I like it. You know, you can set it to just automatically record things, and you don't have to worry about the DVR space. It just records everything you want.
I wanted to throw this one up. Walter said, I'm on YouTube about 14 hours a day. Yeah. Heather only has cable because it's covered by her HOA. I wouldn't pay for it on my own. Right.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. Mars laughing at paying for YouTube TV. It's different than just YouTube.
Yeah.
Where it's got all the other channels on it as well.
Yeah, there's YouTube and there's YouTube Premium, which gives you regular YouTube without commercials, right? That's completely separate. This is like cable TV. There's YouTube and then there's YouTube TV.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is like a streaming service in and of itself.
It's a streaming service. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about, can we talk about this creepy cyborg fish or jellyfish?
Why not?
Look at that.
This is an artist rendering, obviously.
It is. But scientists are hoping one day they can use these to explore the ocean depth. I have questions about the ethics of this, of us using...
Could you wait until the end of your presentation?
Wait for the questions. I have questions about using a living creature like this, but let me tell you the story, okay? Human beings are trying to understand the overall health of the ocean. It's really, there's so much we don't know about the ocean, about what happens down there, right? About things. And so they're trying to use some of the simplest creatures as tools to check it all out. And all they need is this, $20 worth of materials, a 3D printer, and what they're calling jellyfish hats.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very interesting thing they're trying to do. They say jellyfish don't have a brain or the ability to sense pain. They're collaborating with bioethicists to develop this bio-hybrid robotic application in a way that's ethically principled. So first, it was a pacemaker-like implant capable of controlling the animal's speed. And given its efficiency, a jellyfish with this kind of implant was able to swim 3 times as fast as a normal jellyfish while only requiring double the energy. Then they did some tinkering around a little bit, and they designed a forebody that harmlessly attaches to a jelly's bell. It's a 3D printed hat-like addition, you can see it there, that not only houses the electronics and sensors, but makes the wearing jellyfish even faster. It's like the pointed end of an arrow, is what they're saying, this research being done at Caltech. It's a specially built 3-story vertical aquarium that they've got, And they tested out this cyborg hat-sporting jellyfish, and they say it can swim 4.5 times faster than a regular jellyfish. And that by controlling the ascent and descent of these jellyfish, they think biohybrids could one day help gather information about the deep ocean that was previously only attainable to us by using very costly research vessels and equipment. Right now, we can only control the up and down movement of cyborg jellyfish, but additional work, a little more tinkering to be done, then they'll be able to maybe move them in any direction they want them to go. Does it seem, I don't know, like the invasion of the body snatchers? Like, let me slap this jellyfish hat on you so we can control where are you going, what you're doing, everything else. Creepy. Yeah. They say it's well known that the ocean is critical for determining our present and future climate on land. And yet, we really don't know very much about the ocean, especially away from the surface. So the goal is finally moving the needle by taking this unconventional approach inspired by one of the few animals that already successfully explores the entire ocean. Because it's one of the few animals you see at the surface and you also see it way down deep, right? Yes. Yes, Kim, that's true. Are you muted? I think you're muted.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's all right.
BW Rock saying today humans turn jellyfish into... I pulled a Kim McAllister.
There you go.
BW Rock saying today humans turn jellyfish into cyborg slaves. 20 years from now, AI turns humans into cyborg slaves. Watch this space.
Right. Exactly.
I was wondering why you were ignoring me. You don't usually do that.
You know, you were not heard. Then I saw your mouth moving and I thought, uh-oh. Yeah, he pulled a Kim.
Yeah, I was coughing. I was coughing. I pulled a Kim McAllister.
See, that's what happens. I just think, I don't know. It just seems weird to take control of another species like that. Yeah. But hey, it's in the name of science. Science and development. So I don't know.
So many bad ideas just floating around this earth. I think we have time for one more story. Do you want to hear about time bomb weed?
Please.
Now, it's not the weed you're thinking about.
Oh, it's not your parents' weed, huh?
No, this is a different kind of time bomb weed. Although time bomb weed sounds exciting. The U.S. is being invaded by time bomb weed. Several species of invasive plants are infesting lawns across the U.S., but only start wreaking havoc on the local ecology after a long period lying in wait. Many of these species are capable of staying dormant for decades after being introduced into a new environment before suddenly reawakening and rapidly expanding, according to a new paper in the journal Nature, Ecology, and Evolution. One of these plants is the common lawn weed Plantago lanceolata, also known as a ribwort or buckhorn plantain, which has one of the longest periods of dormancy in the U.S., lying in wait for up to, Kim, 177 years. Wow. Can you imagine? That's what we're looking at right here. This is the Plantago lanceolata. It's an invasive plant, also known as ribwort plantain. Can you believe that? It can remain dormant up to 177 years before expanding. It was introduced in the U.S. in 1822. And has since expanded widely across the U.S. Some people may experience allergic reactions to this pollen. In areas where ribwort is abundant, it can contribute to hay fever and other respiratory issues for susceptible individuals. While ribwort is generally non-toxic to livestock, it can be unpalatable and reduce the quality of pasture for grazing animals in large quantities. It may also cause digestive issues. Ribwort is only one of around 700 species that have shown a lag phase, what they're calling L-A-G, lag phase. So there may be more. We don't know how this was introduced to the U.S., but we know it came from Europe. It's very likely to be an accidental introduction, as its medicinal usages are not well known in the U.S. And it's not dormant. It has been one of the most successful invaders in the U.S. and has been reported in all 50 states. And is also declared as a noxious weed in Iowa and Michigan, according to the authors of this study. And we have a picture of another plant. Here's another one.
Walter says, can I get some time bong weed?
Yeah. This plant is, this is velvet leaf. This is also an invasive species in the U.S.
BW Rock says it does have medicinal uses, if that's any consolation.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. But they were saying that it wasn't known at the time that there were medicinal usages. So there you go.
Excellent. Can I throw in one more before we're gone? Because Wes says, in addition to those jellyfish that wear the hats, They've done it with cockroaches. Look up cockroach robot with live cockroaches. And so I did, Wes. You are right. Look at that. Apparently, cockroaches have also been outfitted with little robot things that control their movement. And the research is being done in order to save human lives in disasters. It's something I'll be reading more about today. Thanks, Wes. That's really interesting.
I didn't know about the saving human lives, but my first thought was like, that doesn't seem ethical to me. Was that your last story?
That was it, unless you want to do more. You want to just keep going? Roll the dice? Just let it ride?
No, that's it. That's it. Okay. So we want to thank a lot of people, right?
We do want to thank a lot of people. First, we want to thank our ongoing contributors, Kim H. and Susan S. for supporting the show.
Oh, it's our friend, Mockingbird.
That's so cute.
We also want to thank Lady Beatrice with $5. We want to thank Wes T. with $5. We want to thank Lady Beatrice with another $5 and Deidre Lozica with $5. Thank you, guys.
I would also add Jerry J's name into the mix. That's really funny. For sponsoring Weird News Wednesday. You are appreciated. Tomorrow, Trivia Thursday. What will the category be? We still have to decide. So you can email us, kim@theafterparty.live, john@theafterparty.live, if you have any suggestions. Until then, have a great afternoon, and we'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye, John Daly.
Good afternoon, everybody. Bye-bye.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.